My name is Gail, and I am an alcoholic. And I am certainly grateful to be here. My sobriety date is March 4th, 1982. My home group is the East Enders Group in Mesa, Arizona. And let's start out with a moment of silence for the AA recoveries for the past 75 years. Our first speaker will be James.
Thanks, guys. My name is Jim Sweeney, and thank God I am an alcoholic. And with your permission, I'd like to read a couple of things, run off a couple of things I'm stealing from other people, and then get into my own experience, strength, and hope. In the chapter, We Agnostics, it says, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live a life on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. I mean, this guy in Vegas that said, can you imagine taking a clipboard and standing in front of Walmart saying, now, would you care to live life on a spiritual basis or die an alcoholic death? Now, that's one of the ones I sold. The other one is from one of my sponsees, and it describes how I feel right now. I'm happier than a mosquito in a nudist colony. I went to school up the road a little bit in Austin and in the 60s. I lasted a year before they suggested that I find another place to pursue my education. While I was there, my brother died. He was 9 years old, and they said it was an act of God. And I said, that guy can go straight to hell. I didn't cry. I can do pretty good now. In 1970, I was in the service. I was back from overseas. And I got a call that my father had had a heart attack. I walked in the house. My mother said, you know he's dead, don't you? I locked my heels, stood at attention, and said, what do we have to do? In 1980, I was in a nuclear power plant in Connecticut, and I got a phone call that my mother had died. And I peeled off my clothes, and I got in the car, and I said, if I'm fired, I'm fired, but I'm going home. And I didn't cry. Today I can cry as, again, as one of my sponsees says, I can cry at an Acme supermarket opening. I introduce myself, and I say, thank God I am an alcoholic, and I do mean that. Because as a result of being a drunken bum, I was reintroduced to a God of my understanding. My story includes a period of better living through chemistry and better living through botany. I grew up in Delaware, which was DuPont's motto for quite a while. I tried it. And during one of those occasions, I was sitting on a rock on the Long Island Sound having an extensive conversation with God. And I went back into the house where a bunch of people were staying, and they were circulating these botanicals. And I talked about this experience I had, and the fellow said, there's this book you gotta read, man. It was A Stranger in a Strange Land. And it was a science fiction book. And one of the things in it that I have kept is a phrase that says, waiting is. I haven't been very good at it, but I remember the phrase. And one of the things that it did was it talked about seeing God in people. And the characters would address themselves, each other, as "Thou art God." And it was a sort of a parable along the story of Christianity. And I wear a T-shirt. I was wearing it most of today. I covered it up with a tie. It says, "I survived Catholic school." And it really wasn't all that bad. It gave me a good foundation for a life that I am able to live today. There's nothing in the 12 steps or the 12 traditions that I hadn't learned by the third or fourth grade. But I had to come to these rooms to prove that I didn't have a problem, to learn that I was lying to myself constantly about how well I was doing those things. I had to learn how to do them for real instead of just sitting around talking about doing them. I don't do them as well as some people would think I should. I do them better than I thought I was ever capable of doing today. I had a great joke that, one of the things I do want to say is if I say anything that offends anyone, I would ask you for two things. One would be to say a prayer for me. The other would be to call your sponsor. I don't want to hear about it. It tells me in the 12 and 12 that it is a spiritual principle whenever we are terribly disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with us. So anybody that I annoy, you may say, "Thank you, I've given you an excuse to find some spiritual growth." So anyway, growing up Catholic, I knew that Jesus Christ was one of us. Because he started out, his mom took him to a wedding, they ran out of liquor, he said, "Bring me some water." Now everybody drank. That's the first miracle. Had to be one of us. But a rehab I went to was a lot easier than the way they got him to quit drinking. I found my understanding of a power greater than myself, and it differs greatly from what I was taught as a child, what I learned as a child. And I can't say, in all honesty, anything about or against what I was taught. What I learned, I didn't like. And that's not necessarily what I was taught. But one of the things that I was taught was that so long as I followed the dictates of my conscience, seeking God of my understanding, I was on the right track. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to do, is to try and find a God of my understanding. When my brother died, I was being cool already anyhow. I mean, I was 19 years old, and church was... That was for the old people, and I was starting to have trouble with alcohol. It was one of the first times when I should have died. I went home from a mock senate and a hairy buffalo party following that. The hairy buffalo party was everybody brought a bottle and dumped it into a garbage can and threw on a block of ice. And then we drank until we were stupider than normal. And I was standing in the middle of South Congress trying to direct traffic about 3 o'clock in the morning when some people dragged me out into the dormitory. And when I woke up in the morning, I was covered in my own vomit. I had passed out on my back and vomited straight up and straight down. And that should have killed me. When I was overseas, I walked point. I do not have a Purple Heart. When I go to a first step meeting and somebody's new, I tell them, "I walk point in Vietnam. I think I'm tough enough to deal with anything. I taught chemistry and radiation safety in nuclear power plants. I think I'm smart enough to deal with anything that comes down the pike. I cannot do this by myself. I need us. I didn't want to admit that. I didn't admit that for a long time. At 4 years without a drink, I went to my first convention. It was the Delaware State Convention. And I knew I didn't have the biggest ego in AA because Clancy was speaking. But I come a pretty close second. When I went to that convention, I wanted to go to every convention, every conference, everything I could possibly get to. I was 4 years without a drink. I was a fire hazard, but I was on a pink cloud. And everything was wonderful. Now, to tell you how AA works, I had separated from my wife by a little over a month. I was unemployed, driving a car that belonged to somebody else. I had borrowed $20, went to the convention. Tickets were $20 for registration. I took my oldest son with me. We had a tent. And, of course, it was a convention, so it rained. I went to the convention with a registration that was paid for. I went to the banquet with a ticket that was paid for. My son bought comic books, and we slept in a motel room. You have always done for me what I could not do for myself. Recently, things in my life have changed. I've survived cancer. I've survived 6 heart attacks. I've crushed 3 steering wheels with my chest and knocked out the windshield with my head. And I should be dead time and time again. I don't know why God has decided to leave me here, but I'm certainly glad that he has. I decided that after my separation and divorce, and after a number of years of chasing every woman in AA, and they all ran faster than I did, that I was going to end up spending the rest of my life by myself. Well, there was one lady about 13 years ago that I had asked out, and she was brand new. And I asked her to go to a bar with me to hear a band. I had won tickets on a radio from a radio station. She politely declined. Well, last September, I picked her up at the airport. She had gone on vacation, and I took her home. And I haven't left yet. And she is the love of my life. And there's love in my life again. To share with someone special. I'd written that off. So would she. And sitting around with a bunch of drunks. Forgot one thing. My sobriety date, or my last drink, was on or about April the 10th, 1988. My sobriety date is somewhere considerably after that. About 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon. I'm running out of stuff that I can say from my heart. I do have a quote that I would like to try and remember. It's from Dr. Bob Story. It says, if you are an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. If you still think you can beat the game alone, that is your affair. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking liquor for good and all, and believe that you must have some help, we have an answer for you. It never fails. If you will go about it with one half the zeal you've been in the habit of showing when you're going after another drink. and what I believe is the most important paragraph in the whole book. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. Thank you.
Thanks, James. You know, when I first got here to this program, this time, I didn't get here looking for a higher power or anything else. I got here because I wanted to stop drinking. I'd had all the hopelessness and misery in my life that I could stand. And I wanted some serenity and some peace. But, you know, along the way, I noticed that the people in the meetings that I attended that had any length of sobriety was talking about a higher power all the time. You know, and I knew that for success, I had to have a little bit of that. And, you know, it was absolutely true. And thank God to this program, I did find a higher power that I choose to call God today. And He works in my life. And for that, I am truly grateful. And our next speaker is Mike.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Mike. My sobriety date is August 23rd, 1985. My home group is the, thank you. My home group is the Happy Destiny Group. Excuse me. We meet every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. in West Valley City, Utah. You're welcome to all join us. Excuse me. Not all at once, please. It's a little church. And I have been a subscriber to our Grapevine magazine for the past 24 years. So, yeah, right. Okay. I'm like everybody else. People that, you know, bring up notes and stuff. I don't like it, but I'm going to have to do it because my life has been so rich and full with gifts from God that came to me in the way of AA experiences. If I was to try to stay on track for what is supposed to be the topic here, I'd go everywhere. You know, I would just be everywhere. So I'll try to keep myself together here. I was born into a family that consisted of an alcoholic father who was, on most days, in full flight from reality. And my mother suffered from morbid obesity that kept her in the house for most of her life. My oldest sister was born 13 months after I was, and another sister completed the family 13 years later. During my childhood years, neither my mom nor dad was an active participant of any organized religion that I know of. Any knowledge I had of a lifestyle that included religious pursuit was gained through reading and what I heard on the radio or saw on television. I distinctly remember hearing terms like God-fearing people and the wrath of God. I already felt different from others my age, and living a life based on fear and some horrible punishment from a vengeful God really had no appeal to me. I began at an early age to form a philosophy of life that did not include God. In our basic text, it says that about half of our original fellowship was like me. We liked to think we were atheists or agnostics. As you may already know, Salt Lake City, Utah is the headquarters of a religious group known as the Mormons. When I stated that I learned of the religious activity of others through my peers, I should be clear that the people I referred to were zealous missionaries of the Mormon doctrine. They tried on many occasions to convince me that their way was the only way. And I'll admit I tried several times over the years to adapt to that lifestyle, but I just couldn't fit in. I got drunk for the first time when I was about 8 years old. And it was on Christmas Eve. My grandmother had decided to include me in our Scandinavian family tradition of a lutefisk dinner. Oh, if you've ever tried lutefisk. Accompanied by a small glass of fruit wine. Ordinarily, our meals did not include wine. When that glass of wine hit bottom, I knew immediately it was not enough. I slipped away from the table halfway through the meal and found the bottle. I drank as much and as fast as I could. My mother discovered me later that evening. She had already endured many years of lonely depression or desperation living with my father, an active alcoholic. Now it seems her oldest son is acting just like his dad. There was nothing I could have done that night that would have harmed her more than to find me in the pathetic state I was in. And that was just the first of many, many times that I would come to know pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization as the byproduct of my behavior. From age 8 to 18, the opportunity to drink was sporadic until I graduated from high school. In those early years, every time I did have access to alcohol, I drank as hard and as fast as I could. No social drinking for me. I drank until I passed out. I immediately experienced blackouts almost every time I drank. I had a few minor scrapes with our local law enforcement agencies concerning illegal possession of alcohol and public intoxication. On one occasion, I became vocally belligerent with an officer and ended up spending the night in jail. When my mother was notified that I was behind bars, she was devastated. She managed to find a bail bondsman and get me released so I wouldn't miss school. When she asked me why I was behaving like someone she didn't know, I couldn't find a way to look her in the eye and explain to her why I acted like I did. My graduation from high school was immediately followed by 2 years of active duty in the Navy Reserve. I was assigned to a ship that served in the Western Pacific from a home port in Yokosuka, Japan. And I found alcohol in abundance from Tokyo to Cebu in the Philippines and all points in between. Upon my return to the U.S., I had become a daily drinker. In the mid-60s, I got drunk at a relative's home and was informed that I would leave or I'd be thrown out. I drove off in a sour mood and decided to seek out some place that I might be welcome. The next thing I remember is I was in the back seat of a police car. Out of the window of the car, I could see a fire truck, more police cars, and some other vehicles that I really couldn't see clearly. I was transported to a local hospital emergency room. I sat on a chair in the waiting area for hours, dripping blood from a hole in my lip, a cut on my chin, and a broken nose. I suspect they didn't like drunks. When I did receive care, the first thing the nurse did was take a blood sample for a blood alcohol test. I was informed at that time a woman passenger was killed in the car I had apparently struck. I can't explain why this terrible incident was treated as casually as it was, but the other driver and myself were issued citations for our actions that led up to the accident. Amazingly, because I had sat there so long, my blood alcohol level was determined to be a 0.14. And at that time, 0.15 was the legal limit for intoxication. The law said I wasn't drunk. I was allowed to carry on my life as though nothing had happened after I paid the $50 fine for the citation I was given. I concluded right then and there that the law of the land, which was a much more fair system than the eye for eye penalty I would pay if the wrath of God I had heard about was the rule. Before the summer was over, I had pondered over the solution to the difficulties I was experiencing many times. Then it hit me. I needed to get married. Within a month, I proposed to my sister's best friend. A month later, in a civil ceremony in Elko, Nevada, and I know a lot of people that have traveled from Utah to Elko, I became a married man. The drinking didn't stop. I had just found someone new to hurt with my escape from reality. In the early 70s, after many more car crashes and other harrowing experiences, I found myself in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, the dad that I mentioned earlier had, a judge had made sure in about 1969 that he knew where the rooms of AA were. And I watched him get sober for a couple of years there. And I couldn't figure out what it was, but I knew there was something in AA, and that's what kind of led me to find AA in that time frame. I had also concluded that my use of alcohol and the problems I was experiencing may be somehow related. And like the newcomer mentioned in We Agnostics, my hope rose as the love of the fellowship was expressed when I was welcomed as a newcomer. It didn't take long to have my hopes dashed at the mention of God. The childhood belief of the wrath of God against those who felt or acted different, especially me, blocked out anything else that was said. Now, I decided after a few meetings that AA might work if I could just analyze the steps and simply eliminate the troubling parts that mention God. So, I settled on the first part of the first step. And the carry the message part of the 12th step as my two-step program. And I know in the 12 and 12 it talks about a two-stepper. You now have one standing in front of you. In the first 3 years of this half-hearted attempt to be a part of AA, both my mother and my oldest sister died unexpectedly. The pain of this loss of my family members was a message to me. I became even more convinced that if there is a God, He certainly wasn't doing anything for me. I didn't drink for several more years, and I continued to play the role of a visitor in good standing in AA for most of that time. My first marriage ended during this dry spell. Within a week or two of my divorce, I remarried. My second wife was a witch. Literally. I don't remember the name of the coven she belonged to, but earth, wind, water, and fire were the powers that rule. Now, since it didn't include anything that mentioned, or the mention of God, I thought I had finally found something that might also work for me. But beyond that basic belief system, the differences between us were just too many. And it seemed like this second marriage wasn't meant to be, and I got divorced again. A month after that divorce, I married for the third time. And as time wore on, I eventually quit going to AA meetings, and needless to say, I started drinking again. In 1985, my world collapsed. My employer at the time had me committed to a treatment center. I was reacquainted with AA and the treatment program and made a half-hearted attempt to work the steps, or to work steps 2 and 3 before I was released. I had yet to face the proposition that either God is everything or else He is nothing. God either is or He isn't. I returned to my struggle with the world without God after 30 days of confinement. In those last years of drinking, the damage I had inflicted onto that third marriage had taken its toll. I divorced for the third time very shortly after leaving the treatment center. Now, maybe a week or so after I left treatment, I heard something in a meeting that changed my spiritual world completely. A man said, "God doesn't have time to keep a list of everything we've done. Santa Claus keeps track of who's naughty or nice and good and bad." As simplistic as that sounds, it was the answer I had been seeking most of my life. I had convinced myself that the fear I harbored of an avenging God wreaking havoc on me was realistic. It was a real fear. The insanity of this unfounded belief, along with the nagging suspicion that I was somehow always the victim, was clear evidence I had lost touch with reality. I decided I should listen to my sponsor and maybe try step 2 and 3 again. And I found something else in the AA meetings I was attending regularly in the years following treatment. I found Shirley. Now, she's been my wife, number 4 if you're counting, for the past 17 years. And like me, she has had her personal struggle with the concept of God. But that's her story to tell. Lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Now, it's said that there's no atheists in a foxhole. My foxhole is the Heart Center Catheter Lab in the Salt Lake Regional Hospital. Several years ago, I had a heart attack. In the following year, I had 3 angioplasties to open the arteries supplying my heart with stents. 2 years later, I was in that foxhole. I had begun to experience chest pains and exhaustion when I had any kind of physical activity. My cardiologist determined that I was in need of another angioplasty. This was my 4th event with this procedure. As the doctor attempted to place a stent in the largest artery feeding my heart, that artery collapsed and my heart began to fail and I started to die right then and there. Frantically, the doctor inserted a second catheter and attempted to hook me up to a heart pump to stabilize my failing heart until I could be possibly scheduled for an open heart surgery. In all the chaos, he allowed my wife to enter the lab for what might be our last goodbye. We were able to join hands and recite the Serenity Prayer together before they wheeled me away. As I was headed for the surgery, I quit fooling myself and accepted the fundamental idea that there is a God and that God is in charge. I silently recited the best version I could recall of the third step prayer. I abandoned myself to my higher power without reservation, and I immediately felt a sense of relief and a sense of peace that I can't find the words to describe. Our book says that much to our relief, we discovered we did not need another's to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach. My approach may be clumsy, but it has worked for me from the day I left my foxhole to this day. A few years ago, I felt like something was missing. I did not know what my higher power, that one I choose to call God, looked like. It seemed like for everyone else there was a statue or paintings or murals or stained glass likeness or something portraying their God. Well, in my home group, one of our regular members was struggling with brain cancer. She had suffered many rounds of radiation and chemotherapy. One night at the home group meeting, she celebrated, it was either 14 or 15 years of sobriety. We teased her about being a high-bottom wino because she had a refrigerator to chill the boxes of cheap wine that she drank. She laughed and told us how, even with all that she had been through, she was, above all, grateful to be sober. She died a week later. God looks like Donna. God looks like the man who saved my life when he let me know about Santa Claus. By the way, what the term the guy used, and I'll just go ahead and throw it out. He said, Santa Claus maintains the shit list, and that I believe. Now, I see the face of God in the members joining me with every AA meeting I attend. And when I attend an AA meeting that closes with the Lord's Prayer, like last evening, you know, I still have my own belief of a higher power. So what I do is I join the circle and I remain silent. I quietly reflect on a prayer that was shared with me by one of my dearest friends in AA, and I ask my higher power to treat me today like I treated everybody in my life yesterday. And lately, I've added another prayer that I overheard in a recent meeting. I ask my higher power to put one hand on my shoulder, one hand over my mouth, and to please guide me in doing His will throughout the day. And that was what I saw of my life without a higher power and how I found what we agnostics led me to. But I want to share a miracle that happened in my life, and I hope I don't run too long here. Stop me if I get too close. Am I over now? Okay. My dad, whom I mentioned, had gone to AA. When I got into the rooms of AA for the first time, he took me around and he introduced me to all of these men that he had met. And I swear, he sounded like Bill. Now you listen to these fellas. They know, they have a handle on this thing and they'll get you on the right path for your life, you know. And I remember that. And, my dad, a little later, was diagnosed with cancer, with bone cancer. And it was in that period that I went out to drink again. And through my younger sister, he kept getting messages to me. He wanted to see me. He wanted to see me as he was dying. And I was so shamed by the way I was living, the way I was drinking, I couldn't go see him. He died when we were apart, and I was out of sight and out of hearing. Three of those guys. Now, I don't know how you make an amends for that, but here's what happened to me. Three of those guys that were in those original meetings went on to serve our fellowship as delegates of Alcoholics Anonymous at the General Service Conference. In 2005, I served as a delegate to the General Service Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous as a Panel 55 delegate. I became the man my dad had always wanted me to be. And the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous gave that to me. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. And I don't know if we saved the last, the best for last, but Melissa is next.
My name's Melissa. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm nervous. I'm also jealous. These guys are done already. My sobriety date is December 27th of 1998, and for that I am truly, truly grateful. I'm very humbled and honored and very anxious about being here in front of you all today. How cool is this? We have all these people here that are sober and enjoying a life in sobriety, and I just think that's amazing. I've been spending most of the morning trying to figure out how the heck it is I got here. it's amazing, and today I know that that's by the grace of a very loving God in my life, but that's not the way I came to you all in Alcoholics Anonymous. The way I came to you is a very broken woman who was spiritually bankrupt and didn't know how to get from there to where I'm at now. And I want to thank the conference committee for choosing me to be here. I was trying to figure out who exactly you thank at an international conference, and they tell me that it was my area delegate, Ross, who I don't think is here, but I want to thank him for throwing my name in the hat to be here. I also want to throw out a disclaimer. It usually takes me about 5 minutes to get unnervous, so you're going to get 5 minutes of me and maybe 15 minutes of God, so I apologize ahead of time for that. Okay. I'm really nervous about this mic thing. Is that better? Okay. Thanks. Sorry about that. All I remember about growing up is about being afraid and being angry. And that's what I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with, was anger and fear. And I certainly struggled a lot with step two, and we agnostics is a lot about step two for me. It gave me two things when I read We Agnostics. It gave me a lot of truth, and it gave me a lot of hope, that no matter where I came from or what my story was, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, that it was good enough and it was going to be okay. And that's probably my biggest message to you all today, is wherever you're at today in your program, spiritually, it's good enough. And there's room for you in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's been my experience. I didn't write any notes, and now I'm wishing I would have. There was a phrase that I saw on a wall once that said, the truth needs so little rehearsal. And I thought, well, then I probably shouldn't write notes because it'd probably all be a lie. I had a lot of justified anger when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. There were things that happened in my life that I truly felt the right to be victimized, because I was. And the one thing that I learned and that you all taught me is that if you allow those things to define you, then that's all you are, is what happened to you. And you gave me permission to walk away from that and to have the freedom from that when you talked about your own concept of a higher power. My higher power that I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with was angry, was vindictive, was scary, was mean, and hurtful. And when I came to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, I sat down next to this lady, and I called her the shiny lady. She had her makeup on. She was dressed professionally. You could tell she was getting ready to go to work. It was a noon meeting. And as she sat next to me, and all I could do in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was cry. I was just devastated. And she reached into her purse, and she handed me a Kleenex. And she patted me on the back, and she said, it's going to be okay. And that was the first time I remember feeling the love of Alcoholics Anonymous. And through the love of you all is how I started learning to define my higher power differently. You also gave me permission in the We Agnostics chapter that I could believe in whatever higher power that I chose, whatever higher power worked for me. And you seem to have a much better higher power than I did. So what I chose to do for a very long time was to borrow your understanding. How I started learning about the true nature of my higher power was through you all. There were three things my sponsor had me do and read when I came to the program. She said, I want you to get a big book, a 12 and 12, and a dictionary. And she had me look up all kinds of different words. And one of the words she had me look up was agnostic. And in the dictionary, it described agnostic as without knowledge. And I was without knowledge of the nature of a higher power that would work for me and help me stay sober. What you guys told me to do was to say a prayer in the morning. Higher power, whoever you are, whatever you are, keep me sober. And when I stayed sober that day, you said to thank him that night, and that's what I did. And that got me through the first several days in my initial beginnings in Alcoholics Anonymous. What I realized about a week or two later was that I did not drink. And it had been a very long time that I tried to do life on life's terms without alcohol, and I was completely unsuccessful. So the prayer thing kind of started working for me, and that's what I used, and that was all I needed to get a little bit of a start, you know. Before that, in my step work, when I came to step two, I was literally in tears. I threw the book across the room because I didn't know how to work step two. I had no clue how to do that. And someone passed by me, and they offered me the opportunity to maybe throw away my old idea of a higher power and try on a new one. He said, I want you to remember one thing. He said, Melissa, God is not your father. I had heard throughout my lifetime that God was He and the Father, and the fathers I had in my life were mean, scary, angry, controlling folks, you know, and what it did was it allowed me to step away from what I thought I knew and allowed me to start believing something that might work better for me. That gave me a whole lot of freedom. It allowed me to see a higher power and see the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in a different way. What a journey it's been, you know. My higher power reveals himself to me as he would have me know him, because that was a prayer that was given to me as well when I was struggling to know who or what higher power was. Someone said, Melissa, why don't you pray to your higher power, reveal yourself to me as you would have me know you. And I started praying that prayer, and there were things that started coming to me that I had never really paid attention to before. For the first time in my life, I sat outside and I watched a sunset, and I could appreciate the beauty of that. We recently went on a trip, and I got to go to California and go to Sequoia National Park. There were these trees that were like 2,500 years old, and they just went up into the sky forever and ever and ever, and you stood underneath them. And I'm looking up, and I'm thinking, how in the world did something this wonderful get created? And how did it survive all this time, you know? 2,500 years is a really long time to survive. And built within this certain type of tree is a healing property that heals itself. They get burned naturally by wildfires, and then they heal themselves, and that's how they have survived all this time. And I'm standing there, and I'm looking at this tree, and it's called our nation's Christmas tree. And I'm looking at that tree, and I'm going, okay, then how did this happen? How did this come to be? Was there not something that created this? And it just made me reflect on how I came to be. You know, why is it that I'm standing here in front of you all right now? Why is it that, you know, I had to qualify for this program by completely destroying my life, you know, in order to stand here and be here with you all? And how is it that I have not taken a drink of alcohol in over 11 years now? That's just amazing, and that's a miracle to me. And you guys kept coming into the meetings, and you kept telling me that you were sober and that you had not taken a drink, and that you thanked your higher power for that. And you believe that that too is responsible, so that's what I believed. And that worked better for me than what I was trying to do in my life. Have you all ever seen the movie 28 Days? Okay, you know that one scene where Sandra Bullock had this sign on her chest and it said, you know, confront me if I don't ask for help. And she's like working with this horse in this equine therapy. She's trying to get the horse's leg up and she's got this sign on and she's on these crutches and she's like, people are asking, she obviously needs help and people are asking her, you know, do you need some help? And, nope, I got it. I got it. And that was me. That's how I live my life is, I got it, God. No, I'm okay. You did me wrong. I'm going to do my life. Thank you very much. And that basically landed me in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, hopeless and helpless and broken. And if that is the best result that I got from my life, perhaps you guys knew something that would work better. And I believed almost naively, you know, my original thought when you all were sitting around and enjoying your life in sobriety before meetings, you know, they encourage you to come to meetings beforehand and stay a little bit after and kind of get to know folks. And we had in our home group at the time this place called Serenity Corner where everybody would come before the meeting and they'd have coffee and they'd talk about their recovery and their life and they would laugh and they would just have what I didn't even know how to describe at the time, but what it was joy. They had joy in their life. And I really wanted that. My initial thought, you know, first thought wrong, my initial thought was, well, if they're not drinking, they have to be smoking something. There's no way they can be that happy just by having a higher power in their life and no alcohol. That just doesn't make sense to me. My thinking certainly has changed since then, but there are miracles in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm one of them, and all of you are one of them, or you wouldn't be here. I loved the part in We Agnostics where it said, deep down within every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. There is something already there within us, and I made the mistake most of my life looking outward towards you to figure out what it was that I was supposed to believe. I had it backwards, okay? And what We Agnostics did was it told me to go the other way, go inward, find out what is already there and build from that. And, you know, I came in with a very minimal understanding of a higher power that I was angry with. And the cool thing about that is if you're in the room today and you're angry at God, that means you believe in Him, you know, and that's what I learned. That if I'm angry with Him, I obviously believe in Him, so I've got somewhere to go with that, you know. And someone had recommended to me, and they asked, have you ever told God how mad you are at Him? And I'm like, no, why would I do that? And so I tried that because I was so willing to do whatever you guys told me to do. I was willing to take any suggestion that you had because I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with the gift of desperation. I could not do life on life's terms without alcohol. The thought of trying to do life on life's terms without alcohol scared me so badly that the thought of ending my life was a possibility, you know, and that's not rational thinking, you know, that's desperate thinking. And I sat down on a park bench and I started writing this letter to God because I'm still having a hard time talking directly to God. I don't know how to do that. So I start writing letters, dear God, and these are my prayers. And that was the best that I could do. Besides the God keep me sober, thank you prayer, that was the only one I could manage. I wrote my prayers and I started writing and I dumped every bit of anger that I had toward God on that piece of paper. And then I neatly put the notebook down next to me and I kind of shrunk thinking, okay, is lightning going to strike me? because I was scared about what that would bring. And nothing bad happened from that experience. What happened for me was I sat there and I felt relief. I felt a sense of a burden being lifted from my shoulders. Guys, when we walk around with that much anger inside of us, it's heavy. It's heavy on our soul. It's heavy on our hearts. And what I felt was the absence of that burden, that heaviness. And I walked away from that park feeling very, very differently. I made peace with the higher power of my understanding because I was willing to do what We Agnostics and what you all suggested, and that is to go within and find what's there and work from that. It meant looking at my fears and facing them, you know, which is really, really hard. It meant forgiving people and a higher power. And I don't regret that, because every day that I spend in Alcoholics Anonymous, every day that I spend sober, is so much better than my very best day out there. And for that, I will keep coming back and keep taking your suggestions, because they work. Wherever you're at in your program of spirituality, it's enough. There's room for you in Alcoholics Anonymous. They found room for me, and I'm truly, truly grateful. This is an amazing thing. It's an amazing journey. We can have fun with it. We can be creative, whatever it takes. I remember going to great lengths to stay drunk. I remember what lengths I went to. It was insane what length I would go to continue drinking. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous never asked that much of me, but if I have that level of willingness, and that's what we agnostic talks about, is are you willing to believe in whatever? Are you willing to take that journey? And that's what we agnostics gave me, was that willingness, looking at the willingness. Am I willing to try? And because of the willingness to try, there is a difference in what I experience with my spirituality today. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. I notice sequoia trees and I think about its mystery and its miracle. You know, I couldn't do that. I couldn't get there when I was trying to do life on my own, independently from a higher power. My approach to my relationship with my higher power today is that of cooperation rather than resistance. I went like this. I fought, you know, every step of the way I fought my higher power. And today I just try to walk along with and cooperate and find out, you know, more. And there's always more to learn. I'm not without knowledge of the true nature of my higher power today, but there's still so, so much more that I have to learn. You know, I'm just a baby. I'm still a beginner. And that is exciting to me, because that means that I will always need that higher power. And that is a strength in this program, to need a higher power. And for me, I always thought it was a weakness if you felt like you needed to depend on anything or anyone else. But that's not the case. Not in this program, not in AA. I have been relieved of my obsession to drink, and that was one of the first gifts that my higher power gave me. I remember saying the good old alcoholic prayer. The very first one I ever uttered, I think, was, God help me. And from that moment forward, I have not had an obsession to drink. And that is a miracle. Thank you for your patience with me. I got really nervous right as I stood up here and was like, oh my gosh, what's the topic and what am I supposed to say? But I have enjoyed this so much. It's truly an honor and a privilege to be here in front of all of you, and I hope that you take away something that you can use. If not, we can certainly chat after. Maybe I can still work on you a little bit. Just kidding. God bless you on your journey, and we're here for you. We're not going anywhere, so thank you for your time.
You know, when I got here, I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I thought an alcoholic was somebody in a pinstripe suit with cigarette burns in the pants. You know, and that wasn't me. But, you know, I owe so much to this program, like all of us do. And I owe so much to people in this program that spent countless hours in parking lots, coffee shops, talking to me when I first got here. My first meeting was in 1976. I didn't get sober till 1982. You know, those 5 or 6 years was absolutely hell. Absolutely hell. Trying to be sober and trying to be drunk at the same time. And, you know, this is a God-given program to me. The only way I got sober is through the grace of God. And so I'm just, you know, you talk about shock and awe. This weekend has been that for me, shock and awe. I was sitting in the Alamo Dome last night, and I absolutely could not believe all the people that was there. Sober alcoholics, you know, and but this program has given me a way to live sober, one day at a time, comfortably. And I've never experienced that in my whole life, and to be comfortable in sobriety. So I'm just very happy to be here. Absolutely amazed, you know, like the other panelists here, you know, I got the letter in the mail that says, do you want to be the chairman? And I said, my God, there is a God, you know. I read it three times before I believed it. So, you know, if you put your name on a list, it could come true. So, but anyway, thank you all for being here, and I would like to thank the panelists. They did a great job.